You're listening to Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family. Welcome to Sleep Stories for Equestrians. I'm your host, Ashley Winch. We're so happy you're here to relax and unwind. If you fall asleep and miss the story, we will recap it at the beginning of the next episode. We've also selected and edited these stories for ultimate relaxation, removing any stressful bits without affecting the story's integrity, so you can focus on drifting off to sleep. With that, let's settle down and prepare for our story. The gates are closed. The horses sleep. The day's work done. The chores complete. Now let us rest, our bodies and minds. Drift off to sleep and close your eyes. It's time for us to turn down for the night. Now let's breathe in, breathe out, and turn off the light. One more time, breathe out, breathe in. Now, let us begin. In the last episode of Sleep Stories for Equestrians, we began a new adventure. The Elf and Her Friends, a horse story founded on fact by Isabel Wortley. In Chapter 1, we learned about Elf, her brothers Eros and Chanticleer, her parents, and her master. Today, we begin. Chapter 2, My Stable Companions. Master, with his usual forethought, provided me with a beautiful box in the same stable as my mother and Eros and Chanticleer, who also shared the same bright, cheery abode. The wooden partitions of our boxes were quite low, and we could easily see each other through the wide iron railings at the top, which made it much easier to talk than if, as is generally the case, the wooden part had reached much higher up, hiding us from each other, and thus making conversation difficult and awkward. Every morning, from the first moment I wake, I listen anxiously for Master's footsteps. I am generally the one to recognize them, and I rush to the stable door. Eros and Chanticleer have sometimes taken other footsteps for dear masters, but I never. I know his step from ever so far away. If Jackie, the boy who fetches the post bag, carries a heavy load as he passes our door, I know Master may be a little late in coming, and I always stretch out my neck and try to see whether the bag looks fat and bulgy or thin and flat. I then draw my own conclusions, but I am not always right, for sometimes the thin bag takes longer to deal with than the bulgy one. Directly, I do hear my master. I rush to the stable door and loudly neigh my good morning to him, and when he lets me out, I rub my head against his shoulder and lick his dear hands. These are my ways of showing Master I love him, just as little children throw their soft arms around their mother's neck and press their lips against hers for the same reason. Our ways of showing affection are quite different, but they both tell the love we feel, that love which makes life happy in both the animal and human world, and without which neither you or I would care to live. In the very early days when I caressed Master, he once or twice offered me sugar. And although I have all a horse's fondness for sweet things, I never could take them when thus offered. I could not bear to think for a moment that master should think mine covered love. My little attentions to him were the outcome of the love I bore him, and not for what I could wheedle out of him. I looked into his brave, strong face with my great brown eyes and told him, just as plainly as ever I could, that it was for his own dear self I loved him and not for sugar and sweetmeats. My thoughts at once, and feeling he had insulted me, begged my pardon and said, "I understand, elf," and he never again offered me tempting morsels to eat when I showed him affection. I felt so grateful to him for understanding me so well, for I loved to rub against him and to kiss his hands, and I could not bear the thought that my overtures would in any way be misunderstood. I felt too big for that kind of thing. It was all very well for the tiny toy terrier dog called Moses to dance and fuss round master for what he could get, but not me. Moses is a very pretty little dog and always slept with me in my stable along with Minnie, the large Persian cat, until the incident I will now tell you about happened. The little fellow and I had become very friendly. I admired his splendid black coat, which shone like satin, and his head, long and lean, was really a beautiful shape. He was rich in tan about the mouth and legs, and each toe had a well-defined pencil mark showing plainly on them, and there was a black spot or thumb mark on the joint of each knee. Over both eyes was a large spot of tan, and also inside each long ear. There was also the right amount of tan on the long, straight legs, so that altogether, Moses possessed nearly all the points which a toy black and tan terrier ought to have. He was a proud little dog and a regular high stepper, and I think during the course of his eventful life, he managed to come into warlike contact with every animal, small and big, inhabiting England. And I must say he always fought valiantly in self-defense when the object of his sharp bites, whatever its size, turned upon him. Nothing of going quietly up to huge fellows like Eros and Chanticleer and giving them a mischievous pinch on the leg. And when pain and surprise made them kick out, I trembled for the little terrier's life. But I need not have been afraid for him. He was so quick that he always managed to escape the blow which might so easily have killed him outright. Sheep stamped their feet angrily at him, and pigs vied each other in poking him out of the fields they occupied. But Moses didn't care. He hadn't a scrap of fear and invaded any territory he thought he would, regardless of the consequences. No place was sacred to him, and he told me, without the slightest regret in his voice, how he went into the beautiful drawing room in Master's house, and with his little feet covered in mud, jumped from one dainty cushion to another until he found one to suit him. I can well imagine his wee majesty cozily curled up on the prettiest and most delicate seat, surveying, without one blink of regret in his bright black eyes, the print marks of his restless paws on the cushions he had tried, but found not quite to his satisfaction. He considered himself monarch of all surveyed, and he insisted on having the company of animals or humans, or both, constantly in attendance. He would not be left alone, and if by chance he found himself shut up anywhere, he howled and shrieked so loudly that anxious people hurried from all quarters to find out whatever could necessitate such heart-rending cries. Moses welcomed his rescuers with wild high jumps and overwhelming kisses, and he didn't care one little bit for the consternation he had caused, and all just because he had found himself alone. One day, however, when I was out with Master, the poor little fellow got shut up in the stable. At first, he thought he was alone and began to cry. But then, quite suddenly, he saw Minnie and stopped at once. He walked up to her and danced about, inviting her to play in his usual friendly way. Contrary to all expectations, Minnie slapped him in the face, and when he tried to protect himself, for Minnie didn't stop at one blow, she put out her claws, a cat's surest weapon, and attacked the little dog's face. Moses, for the first time in his life, really terrified, tried to run away from Minnie, but she closely followed him, and when he noticed something moving in the corner and made a dash for the place, Minnie was on his back in a moment, her sharp teeth piercing into one long ear. Moses now cried from real pain, and if Ricketts had not heard him and gone to the stable just when he did, I am afraid Minnie would have killed the little terrier, for the moving of something in the corner was a heap of 5 fine kittens which had only been born that morning. Master was just leading me in when Ricketts came out of the stable, carrying the poor little Moses in his arm. Tenderly, Master and Ricketts bathed all the damaged parts, and fortunately, the poor shivering terrier was not so badly hurt as suggested. Moses received such loving sympathy and petting, which made him feel happy and important, but never again would he come into my stable. If he and I were talking together in the field and he caught a glimpse of Minnie, he fled away as fast as his long legs would carry him. When Minnie's family was able to take care of itself, she began to miss Moses very much and tried to make it up to him. But all her overtures were in vain. The little fellow had received a shock he would never get over. His joy at finding Minnie when he thought he was alone, and her violent attack on him, had left an impression which I am afraid not even time, the softener of all wrongs, will be able to obliterate. I pointed out to Moses that it was only Minnie's motherly anxiety which had made her so violent, but he only shook his little head and said, "Please don't talk about Minnie to me." And so I said no more. The break made Moses and me see much less of each other, for which I was really sorry. I had grown to love the cheeky little chap with his fearless, spoiling ways, and I missed him sitting at my feet, his whole body alert for mischief, and his long black ears, unspoiled by scissors, upright and expectant. But Eros and Chanticleer were rather glad when he ceased to come to the stable, because they didn't like the sharp little pinches on their unsuspecting legs, with which mischievous Moses loved to surprise them, for the fun of seeing them kick out, in spite of the great risks he ran of being maimed. Thank you for joining us on Chapter 2 of The Elf and Her Friends, A Horse Story Founded on Fact by Isabel Wortley. Enjoy this calming music as it carries you off to sleep.
Thank you.